blood. Meeting his glowing gaze, I studied him briefly. You came for me. That's pretty cool.
I will always come for you.
His tail flicked the wall, and his wings were held out in a show of what I took to be readiness, combined with intimidation. It was working. The others wouldn't get near us. I've seen this thing before. Heracles was the nearest, his tree-like form tense. He's not a thing, I said and turned. He's a grotesque. I met his gaze. The happy glow in his faded. His arms were outstretched for a hug. I didn't move. All I could think about was what he did to my parents.
What lies have they told you?
He asked in a low voice. Mismatch drew me into his body once more, prepared to fly, but I pushed his hand away and stepped forward. No lies. I learned the truth about a few things, I replied.
You're with these people?
I am. I already tossed their leader over the side of the wall for disobeying Mama's orders.
No one else will hurt you, Lyssa.
Gods help me, I trusted him. I stepped forward and grimaced at the pain, then limped towards him, throwing myself into the arms of my guardian. I had done this a million times in the forest, but never had his strong embrace been so welcome.
I've missed you, Heracles whispered fiercely into my hair.
I missed you too, I said. He felt like home as usual, despite the revelation of what he had done before me.
Is your pet dangerous?
Mismatch isn't a pet.
He's one of your creations, isn't he?
I twisted in his grip to see the grotesque. Mismatch's wings were folded at his back, and his hard gaze was on the men behind Heracles. Sort of. He kind of grew a life of his own, though.
My Lyssa, always changing the world around her, he said with gruff affection. Send him away so we can talk.
No, I replied softly. He stays with me. Heracles gazed down at me, and I saw his disappointment.
You've changed much already. I wanted to protect you from the ugliness of the world.
From you?
Yeah, sweet Lyssa. From me and all the people like me.
My eyes filled with tears at the admittance. I wasn't ready to lose my hero, my adopted father. I wasn't ready to feel so alone, facing my fate as I watched the layers between me and reality peel away.
I wiped my eyes.
Your leg,
Mismatch said. I know, I said and left Heracles' grip. I need a doctor.
We have one here.
I glanced doubtfully at the ruffians behind him.
Really?
Heracles laughed.
Welcome to my world, Lyssa. We live beneath the city. Come, I'll show you.
He started away. Are we really safe? I didn't follow. Both of us?
I give you my word.
Mismatch drew abreast of me. I didn't have to ask to know his opinion on accompanying my guardian anywhere. The two looked at each other with anger, if not death, in their eyes. Rather than try to convince him, I slid my hand into the monster's. He glanced down at me, but didn't object when I began to follow Heracles.
Out of curiosity, what did you learn?
Heracles' tone was terse.
About me.
It's not important, I said, recalling how curious Adonis had been about my relationship with Heracles.
Your toes are curling,
Mismatch said a second before Heracles spoke.
I can always tell when you're lying.
Oh my gods, can't a crippled girl get some compassion instead of an interrogation? I complained. Heracles stopped and scooped me up in his arms. Mismatch growled, but Heracles ignored him.
Now, what did you learn?
I sighed. About my parents. Heracles stopped walking and stood rigidly in place, eyes on some point in the distance.
He killed them? The flying creature sounded surprised for the first time since we met.
I didn't answer.
Then why are you here with me now?
Heracles's question was barely audible.
Because I love you, I whispered.
Because you're my Heracles.
I am sorry, Alessandra.
I stretched to see the creature trailing us and offered him a small smile. He was learning how to be a better human.
Let's get you to the doctor.
Heracles started forward once more. His face had blanched, and his eyes were blank. Chapter 22.
True wisdom comes to each of us when we realize how little we understand about life, ourselves, and the world around us. Socrates.
Neither spoke the rest of the way to the medical facility. We entered the walls and walked along roughly hewn tunnels, slanting downwards gradually, until they met stairs that took us beneath the ground level. Mama's men had managed to expand the sewer systems and underground bunker and tunnel network beneath Washington, D.C., to the walls and beneath the city. The result was a shadowy honeycomb of uneven tunnels and paths that smelled sometimes of rot, sometimes of must, and led to cavernous rooms, some as large as a city block. It was amazing, yet scary, as I wasn't entirely certain the men around Heracles would listen to him. The medical facility was its own private chamber, the size of my villa, and partitioned into sections by curtains. Heracles set me down on a bed next to a man in a white lab coat. I wasn't about to admit weaknesses in front of Heracles or a mismatch, but I was a little lightheaded. The two waited outside the exam room. Gritting my teeth, I bore through a shot to numb the area around my thigh so the doctor could clean and stitch it, then tugged up my shirt for him to check the slash along my ribcage.
Lissa, clothes,
Heracles called and stuck his arm into the room. The doctor grabbed them and set them on a stool near the table. After a shot of antibiotics, he washed his hands.
You're done, he said.
Local anesthesia will wear off in an hour. Painkillers on the table. I stood. He left me alone to change, and I did my best to clean up the blood remaining before pulling on black cargo pants and a sweatshirt that smelled of Heracles, and fell to my knees. Weary and achy, I tested my body before joining Heracles outside the exam room.
Good as new, I said.
Where's... He pointed up. Mismatch was perched on a cement beam high above us, appearing ever so much like the grotesque he was.
That thing tried to kidnap you when you were six, Heracles said quietly.
He was trying to rescue me, I replied, and met his gaze, once more thrown into deep confusion.
How much do you know about me?
About what I am and what they want to do to me.
Heracles was silent for a moment before he spoke hoarsely. You really have grown up.
His emotions were too jumbled for me to read. I wasn't certain I wanted to know what he felt. I needed distance between me and the world, or thought I did. The moment I saw pain and sorrow on his features, my desire to remain impartial to my caretaker melted. Crossing to him, I hugged him.
Don't be sad, I murmured. Just be honest with me. I don't need you to protect me anymore.
You need it now more than ever, Lissa. I need to know what I'm facing, what I am, how I can possibly survive this.
I've been as cut off as you from the world since we entered the forest.
He eased away.
Let's find a place to sit and talk.
He led me out at the medical area and into what appeared to be a community space, filled with old furniture and televisions, and a few old video games. I knew without looking Mismatch was tracking our movements from his perch above. Mama's men stopped speaking and whatever they were doing as I passed. I understood their resentment after the incident earlier. And I began to wonder how I was supposed to fulfill the Silent Queen's purpose
and lead people who wanted nothing to do with me, unless it was to throw me off the wall. Heracles led me to a quiet area and started to sit when he caught sight of someone behind me and rose.
"Didn't expect to see you here," he said. A flicker of warmth was in his gaze.
Turning, I saw Dozy as she lowered the hood of her cloak. "I was on my way here when the magistrate raised the alarm about the kidnapping," she said.
"Sorry, Alessandra.
We are working out the kinks in the Alliance.
You'll need to magically reappear in your villa soon."
Though speaking to me, her eyes were on Heracles, and I sensed more between them. It was different than the level of intensity between her and Nico. Far less homicidal.
"You two know each other?" I asked curiously.
"Only met recently," Dozy replied.
"Am I interrupting?"
"Sort of," I said.
"No,"
Heracles replied at the same time. I rolled my eyes and sat down. "Fine. He was about to explain how messed up things are. You might as well join us."
"Theodosia is Mama. Interesting."
When Mismatch sounded this intrigued, I didn't think it was good. His loyalty was to me and Lantos. I didn't know which one won out, though, when it came down to triumvirate business. Resting my head back on the couch, I gazed up at him.
"No, the Silent Queen is,"
I replied aloud.
"Who?"
Dozy followed my gaze and gasped. She uttered several foul curses.
"You brought him here?"
"You know each other?"
Heracles asked.
"Yeah, unfortunately.
If you tell your boss, Adonis, I'll hunt you down." I laughed.
"Adonis?"
Heracles was frowning.
"That thing is Adonis?"
"At night," I supplied. "I met him when I was younger. He appeared out of nowhere, and a couple of cops brought him in off the street. Disappeared that night, but not before he shredded the police station." Dozy was glaring up at the creature. "That was before his boss twisted him into a monster worse than that." My amusement faded. Mismatch was watching me, unconcerned with Dozy.
"So that's what happened," I murmured.
"No, Lantos saved my life after Heracles almost killed me. But I was the person I am long before Lantos. I've begun to remember what I was."
"It'd be nice to know."
"Not to butt in, but do you want to talk?"
Heracles eyed the grotesque. He sat on a love seat opposite me.
"Yeah," I said, and shifted to see them both. "I'd advise you to make it quick. You need to be back where the magistrate can find you before the Queen's efforts to calm him wear off," Dozy said.
"You turn her back over to the man who wants to steal her life and turn her into a monster like he did me?"
Heracles bristled.
"My orders are to avoid confrontation with him and his people at all costs."
"All this,"
Dozy swept her arms out around her,
"is at risk. We aren't in the position to act yet."
Heracles' jaw was ticking.
"It's okay, I get it,"
I spoke before he could argue. "I'm under the impression I'm relatively safe for now."
"You're never safe,"
Dozy countered.
"She's right,"
Mismatch agreed.
"I'll give you 10 minutes. Then I suggest you have him take you back."
Dozy pointed at Mismatch. She rose and moved away, leaving Heracles and me alone. Now that I had the chance, I didn't know what to say. I'd already seen the look on his face when I mentioned my parents.
"You want to talk about that night?"
he assessed. My guardian always knew how to read me. I nodded with some reluctance.
"After I knocked that thing out of the sky and caught you, you changed me. It was your magic. You took what I'd become and reversed it until I knew who I was again."
"I don't understand," I said.
He studied me. I saw he didn't want to reveal everything.
"When I was 10, I was twice the size of the other kids in my class. Twice as strong, twice as fast. I caught the attention of a wealthy man who specialized in grooming Olympians. My parents were thrilled. We were poor, and he offered them a stipend if I'd live with him and train. He became my benefactor, but part of his program didn't involve training until after I'd been transformed genetically and physically into the person that could survive his training. I spent 10 years on my back, alternating between surgery and recovery. He replaced every part of me he deemed weak. Add to that genetic manipulation and facial reconstruction surgeries so I resembled his illustrious grandfather when he was younger. And the real me became lost, buried beneath scars, body parts that weren't mine, and new genes. I couldn't remember what my real face and body looked like, or my parents' names. My mouth was agape. I couldn't imagine rebuilding someone's body the way he described, or the amount of time, money, pain he went through to become the most athletic, successful Olympian of all time. I became what he said I was, Heracles continued. I couldn't even think for myself. I obeyed. You saw that when you looked at me. Even at the age of 6, you knew how to help people. He waved over his head at the ribbons I alone saw. You undid what he did. And I began to remember, to understand, to feel like a real person again. And the buried part of me that had a conscience knew you were going to be crucified if I let them take you away.
You grabbed me and ran, I whispered.
He nodded. We were on the run for a week. It was impossible to keep you hidden. I took a razor, then a flame torch to myself. I was so sick of what I'd become and too accustomed to pain to care. He rubbed his scars. I wanted to burn and cut away the man he made me into. With the stamina and strength he'd built into me, I was able to keep ahead of Sisa, the military, and the royal guard. But even I needed help and rest at some point. I didn't think we'd survive much longer until Father Christopoulos found me and began talking to me about the old ways and how you were part of a prophecy to bring them back. That's when I went to my benefactor one last time and begged him for a favor. He granted us the forest, and Lantos wiped your memory. I listened, unable to recall the story he told from my own mind. Why didn't I recognize Lantos when we met again recently? Why can't I remember the time between when I fell and when I arrived at the orphanage? Lantos explained there were levels involved in compartmentalizing memories. His magic sealed away some, but it was his father's magic that tucked away most of them. And his father is a titan, as opposed to a half-breed demigod. It wasn't the history I expected, perhaps because I was waiting for something horrific to cross his lips. I changed you, I said, fascinated by the concept. You fixed me. Studying my guardian's face, I began to pity him. Turned into some sort of Frankenstein, and then shown what he was, he had tried to destroy himself. My sweet Heracles didn't deserve such a fate, even if I didn't yet know how to tackle the idea of him killing my parents. And the priests created a spy ring out of the nymphs, I mused. You knew about that, too. I did. I don't know if it survived, since the priest didn't.
It did. Leandra took it over.
Always the sharpest of them. A little jealous, even now, about how perfect Leandra was, I changed the subject.
Who was your benefactor? I asked.
The man known now as the Supreme Magistrate. He was a low-level politician with his daddy's money when we met. My Olympic wins propelled him upwards into the strata he's in now.
You're afraid he'll do to me what he did to you.
I know he'll destroy you. It's what he does.
My hands were clenched together. I shook them loose self-consciously and glanced up at Mismatch. He was close enough to have overheard everything.
Was that a good thing or not?
I hated not knowing where he stood. You're here, I said. Do you trust Dozy and the Queen?
I think they are the least evil of the three.
I bit back a smile.
That said, I feel like I didn't raise you anywhere near right. You were too good and sweet and honest to deal with manipulative bastards. All of them want something from you, and each is willing to bulldoze the world twice over to get it.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out. Just not sure how I do anything without ending up torn to pieces or dead.
I wish I knew.
Ouch. If Heracles didn't know either.
Time's up, Dozy said, and approached once more. Hey, come down, she motioned to Mismatch.
I stood, my body stiffening up already from the night of being beaten down.
Mismatch floated down from the rafters and landed near us.
If you breathe one word of any of this to Lantos, Dozy said, glaring at Mismatch. What I tell him is not your concern,
Mismatch replied. I cleared my throat.
What'd he say?
Dozy asked. Probably what you'd say in the same situation, I replied.
Look, Adonis, as far as I know, the Queen is the only person not out to have Alessandra killed or ripped apart. I don't know what Lantos is planning, but I don't trust it.
I will always protect you, Alessandra, but I owe my loyalty to no one else, and if I act, it's out of concern for your safety. I don't care who I ally with.
I almost asked what had happened that he wasn't claiming loyalty to Lantos any longer, but stopped myself. We're good, I said to Dozy, uncertain if it was entirely true.
Good. We'll take you to the top of the walls. He can fly you home.
Mismatch bowed his head. You're probably kind of wanted by the Supreme Magistrate too, huh? I asked Heracles, not wanting to leave him behind.
You could say that,
he said. We followed Dozy through the underground world to the wall that ran on one side. She motioned to a wide stairwell.
Take it straight up, she said, eyeing Mismatch once more.
I waited for them to come with us, then realized they were staying. I crossed to Heracles and gave him another quick hug before joining Mismatch in the stairwell. We began to climb, me with some difficulty given the state of my right thigh.
He kills your parents and you forgive him so easily.
I don't know what to think, I mumbled. He raised me, Mismatch.
You are much quicker to judge me.
I said nothing. My confusion was growing by the day. I felt deep inside my time to decide what to do with my life, which side to choose, was rapidly becoming closer. I wanted away from everyone. I wanted to return to the forest and start over. This time, I'd know better than to step outside the boundaries. How did Dozy expect me to lead people who thought quite accurately that the best way to win was to kill me? How did I trust Lantos when he claimed he'd only torture me if necessary, and only for a short time if so? Cleon hadn't tasked me yet, but he clearly wanted me in the Oracle's place. This would be so much easier if I had a fourth option, I said quietly as we continued to climb.
Unless it was worse than the other three.
Is that even possible at this point?
Perhaps.
And you? What's your angle in all this?
I have none.
That's not true. You work for Lantos. You should want what he wants.
He has not the mind for strategic thinking. I do his thinking, and he manipulates. I've always known I could be where he is, but never cared for the position. I had no purpose but to serve the man who saved my life, until the courtyard when I began to remember.
What became your purpose then?
You.
My heart fluttered.
Protecting you. Ensuring Lantos doesn't go to phase two. Trying to understand what you're struggling with. Who to trust. Who can offer you safety. Who won't turn on you. How you can survive this.
What's phase two?
You don't want to know. Suffice to say, it's not ideal.
Okay, so you're the strategic thinker. What do you see when you look out on all of this mess?
What do you see?
He challenged. My mind doesn't work that way. I can't get over what my next move should be. I held my breath, waiting for him to answer.
I see why you bear the double omega.
It was another of his vague, almost riddles. Another sign he was likely toying with me, at least a little. Unless he was truly uncomfortable saying the words. Heracles wasn't preparing me for Armageddon. He was preparing me to be Armageddon. We reached the top of the wall. The air was fresher, the night sky sparkling with stars. I was hurting from the climb and pretty sure the warmth sliding down my leg was from a soaked bandage.
You need to see the doctor first thing.
I rolled my eyes, like Cleon's not going to wonder how I ended up stabbed.
I forgot you couldn't lie to save your life.
You say it like it's a bad thing. His wings flared out on either side of his grotesque body, and I hesitated. He was absolutely incredible, in a really freaky way. Mismatch held out his hand. I took it, and he drew me to him, then released me. I didn't move, not wanting to breach whatever sort of protocol involved in flying with him. And just a little unnerved by the excitement and heat in my blood.
It's a rough ride with someone else, he warned.
I'm good with heights. Generally okay with flying.
Generally?
You probably don't want to do any quick ascensions or loops again, I replied.
You'd rather walk.
I sighed. Don't be cranky, just get me home. I'll warn you if I'm going to throw up.
Much obliged.
He slid an arm around me and pulled me into his hard body. My breath caught in my throat. Staring at his chest, I ordered my face not to turn pink.
Not used to men touching you.
He was amused. Stop it. Fly me home, you stupid oversized bat. His other arm went around me, and I lifted my arms to circle his neck. Mismatch lifted me first, then sprung into the air. I squeezed my eyes closed, half expecting him to mess with me and twirl or dive or something, and breathed in his calming scent. He didn't. He didn't fly too high and kept us steady, my legs between his and his arms firmly around me. I ventured to look over my shoulder once and not again, equally amazed and horrified to be flying. His grip around me loosened, and I clutched at him tighter.
We're there.
I risked a peek over my shoulder and saw the balcony overlooking my gardens. He flew as close to it as possible, then released my legs and lowered me to the marble flooring. The horizon was lightening, and I began to hope no one had plans for me so I could sleep for a day. My dangling feet met the balcony, and I slid down his arms until I was standing on 2 feet. Are you leaving? I asked without thinking.
Unless I'm invited to stay.
No, I replied too quickly and moved back. Stupid question. Thanks for the ride. Even so, I wasn't able to look away. I also had the distinct sense of disappointment that he was leaving. As if the bond between us was becoming stronger, or at least more insistent than it had been. Mismatch said nothing more. One gravity-defying stroke of his wings sent him into the sky. Rather than retreat for what little sleep I could get, I stood at the balcony and watched him. He soared overhead, wings dipping and form circling, floating on invisible currents briefly, before he twirled and tucked his wings for a steep dive towards the side of the city where his compound was. He disappeared from sight, and I returned to my bed. Seconds after my head hit the pillow, I was out. Chapter 23.
Any moment might be our last. Everything is more beautiful because we're doomed. We will never be lovelier than you are now. We will never be here again. Homer. You were here all night. I was a terrible liar, and the magistrate wasn't buying anything I said. I told you already, yes. Tired and bruised, I was trying not to move too much because it hurt to breathe. And this, he indicated the cut in my thigh the doctor was stitching up after it tore when I fell out of bed. I'd forgotten it and made too quick an attempt to stand. I fell into my nightstand, I replied. He pursed his lips, managing to judge me without losing his pleasant expression. Heracles's story played through my thoughts as I studied the regal politician. I didn't know how anyone could torture another to the extent Heracles had been tortured. Nothing, not all the fame, honor, and money 10 Olympics brought, would tempt me. I was also all too aware the people around me didn't have the same moral boundaries. Not Nico, not Adonis, not Lantos or the Silent Queen, who gave off vibes of being able to do so much more than I cared to imagine. I didn't know where Dozy stood. We have a lunch planned for you at 1, the magistrate said. Sounds good, I replied with no enthusiasm. My apologies for doubting you. I searched his face. He had relaxed. Either he believed me, or was willing to move past it, a reaction I wasn't certain how to take. It's okay. I was up partying too late last night. I should have answered your calls. No hard feelings. There are ambassadors here to see you at lunch. The world is quite abuzz with you. He appeared pleased. Yeah, I didn't trust myself to say more. The doctor placed a bandage on my thigh. I watched him clean up the area, dreading standing up for fear of pain. He handed me a small bottle of painkillers, and I rose, testing my leg. My thigh was completely numb, though nothing was helping my bruised ribs. I joined Cleon at the door of the small medical clinic on the compound. He led me away. Leandra and 2 security guards trailed. Dressed in workout clothing, I suspected I'd probably spend the rest of the day in a dress again. We crossed the compound to my villa, and the magistrate paused at the entrance. Nico is beefing up security, in anticipation of the ambassadors and politicians who will be in attendance. I'll leave my personal guard here for you. I tensed. He made it sound like he was doing me a favor, but I had a feeling he no longer trusted me. Thanks, I said, and walked in the front door. I'll be ready before 1. Which was in about 40 minutes, I groaned internally. What the hell happened last night? Leandra demanded the moment she closed the door. I don't want to talk about it. You completely disappeared and show up torn up. I sighed. With Cleon gone, I wasn't afraid to limp or hold my bandaged ribs. I got no sleep. Please, please, can I lay down? I promised to tell you, but I gotta do it horizontally. Fine. Leandra stalked angrily back to my bedroom. I stretched out across the bed and sighed deeply. You have a gown picked out? Don't try to change the subject. I rolled my eyes and stared at the ceiling. I told her in as few words as possible about my adventure. The bed beside me sank beneath her weight. She perched and listened intently, frowning. When I finished, I waited for her reaction, not completely sure I understood everything that happened. Glad to hear Heracles is okay. We knew where he was, but not how he was, she said, pensive. What is this between you and Adonis? He's a monster at night? Yeah, long story.
He's a nice monster who helps me. And an asshole human butcher during daylight who was supposed to kill or crucify you, if I recall. It's complicated. I wish... I twisted my head to gaze at her. What? I wish we had more time to establish our network. I get nothing about the intentions of the Triumvirate in my reports. I still can't believe you nymphs are spies. Good ones. We should know something. Look, Leandra, I grimaced as I sat up. I don't think it's possible to know what members of the Triumvirate are planning. Did you have any idea there was a secret city beneath this one? None. Exactly. They hide their secrets too well, even from the other members. Still, we owe it to you and the priests to know more. You'll figure it out. I pushed myself off the bed. A platter of bakery items was on the breakfast nook table. Brightening, I went to them. I always ate too much when I didn't get enough sleep.
Oh my gods, these are amazing.
If you eat too many, you won't fit into your dress. I ignored her and stuffed the rest of the croissant into my mouth before double-fisting a fresh raspberry scone in one hand and Danish in the other. Trailing her into the massive closet, I chewed and looked around tiredly. The magistrate insisted you wear something the traditional colors today, Leandra said. I don't like it. She held up a cream-colored dress with a high waist, tied by a sunny yellow silk sash. It's pretty, I said through mouthfuls of pastry. Not the dress, idiot, she said with a noisy sigh. I don't like that he wants you dolled up more than usual. Ambassadors. Ambassadors attended the soiree. He wants this occasion to be special. I was too fatigued to really care. He won't do anything to me yet, I said. Right? I've heard absolutely nothing indicating he will. So? Maybe it's just super formal. Maybe. She frowned. Put that down and change. She snatched the remains of the scone out of my hand and tossed it into a garbage can. I did as she told me, then sat at the vanity where she did my hair and makeup. She grumbled about the amount of effort it took to hide the dark circles beneath my eyes and the bruise on one cheek from my altercation atop the wall. When she finished, I gazed at myself in the mirror. Wow, you can't even tell I got punched, I said. I look good. You'll pass. I'll never be as pretty as you, I know. She smiled at me in the mirror, a wicked gleam in her eyes. You're wearing heels.
Oh my God, Leandra, I can barely walk today.
Shut up. I picked them out for you already. I didn't think the Silent Queen had servants talking to her like this. I sighed and rose, sliding my feet into modestly high platform heels. Hey, these aren't bad. You'll kill yourself in stilettos, but these are sturdy. Like you. Oh, you're such a bitch, Leandra, she laughed. I smiled, unable to stay angry with one of the only people I could trust. Excuse me. A second servant came to the door and offered a shallow curtsy. You have a visitor. At least this one knocked instead of dragging me out of bed. I walked a few steps cautiously, then found the shoes steady enough. Limping to my bedroom door, I exited into the hallway and didn't make an attempt to stop the hobbling movement until I was about to enter the foyer. I paused, already sensing who was present without seeing him. Facing the balcony overlooking the gardens, I saw Adonis at the railing in his normal black Cissé uniform, sans mask. His clothing clung to his tall, lean frame, and my eyes drifted down him. Leandra was frowning again. She trailed me to the double doors, but remained there while I approached Adonis. His gaze was on the garden. The awkwardness of my trip home last night was forefront in my thoughts, despite my attempt to pretend Adonis and Mismatch were two different people. I crossed my arms and stood in the middle of the balcony. Mine's not dead. I said in the tense silence. The garden.
Gods, I'm such an idiot. What was it about the man I should want nothing to do with that left me fevered? Stupid beyond normal.
I don't have minders either, was his response. Send her away. I hated when he told me what to do. But I turned and waved Leandra back. I drew Nira as well, sensing something about him that wasn't normal. I leaned against the railing as well and gazed at the flowers below. I'm leaving for a while, he said at last.
To where?
He glanced at me. Not that it's my business.
In fact, it's not. Why are you even telling me? I babbled. It's not like...
I care. Amusement lifted the strange darkness in his gaze. He seemed more aware, more present today. More like Heracles the day I fixed him.
Something happened to you, I said.
Yeah, it did. I didn't do it this time. No. My memories returned, those from before I met you. From a time too long ago for records to exist, and those of the 4,000 years I spent as a stone beast before you reanimated me.
4,000 years? My gods.
Yes, the gods. Only they could devise such a brutal fate. The bitterness in his tone was unmistakable.
Who were you before?
He turned over his right wrist, where the faded birthmark of an Omega letter was present. A prince of Greece who fell under a terrible curse.
The grotesque prince.
Your history is amazing. It's something.
He turned to face me.
But I have to leave to find something I left behind.
From 4,000 years ago?
I arched my eyebrow skeptically. It won't be sitting where you left it, that's for sure. Which is why this might take me a while. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Why are you telling me this?
I didn't voice the words this time, afraid of the potentially damning response.
Okay, I said finally, aware he was waiting for me to speak.
You remember how to contact me if you need help. In case you can't feel my body or something? I asked, then laughed awkwardly. He gave an almost smile before closing the distance between us. He reached out to lift the teal gem from its place at the center of my chest. I barely remembered to breathe, watching his long, strong fingers caress it. Hold it in your fist and think of me, he said. I met his gaze, fluttery and fevered as usual when he was close enough for me to smell him, and nodded. It was so much more intense dealing with him during daylight than the monster at night. Leandro would tell me I was slow, but it dawned on me in that moment what was between us. I'd mistaken the tension between a man and woman attracted to one another for the natural connection I shared with Adonis. Part of what I felt was the natural bond, but this was deeper, more intense, less fleeting than anything I'd ever experienced for the boys at the campground. I didn't want Adonis to leave because I did care. Too much. I know you're in danger, he continued, oblivious to my thoughts. But I have to do this. I have to understand who I am. Or was.
You're on a journey like I've been on, I replied.
I do understand.
Were you like...
you now? A butcher? I nodded half-heartedly. The world was very different then. But yes, I was every bit what I am now. Enslaving or slaughtering entire races of people I defeated in battle. My edge comes from who I am, not what Lantos made me forget. Gods, how his words bothered me. I had never been as confused by one person as I was him either. an admitted butcher with no remorse, yet the capacity for gentleness and kindness.
Your fists are clenched,
he observed quietly.
It's not anger, is it?
No. I forced my hands open. I have no idea what this is. He studied me, mercifully quiet, even though I suspected we both knew what this was. I never expected you to rescue me or help me. I'm fighting out. I can't expect that of anyone, I said, and shifted back onto solid ground.
No, you can't.
I hated that he agreed with me. He dropped the gem without moving out of my space and cupped my cheek with his warm palm. Sparks of electricity tickled me from the inside out. I had no real urge to move and began to sink once more into the spell I always did around him. Half amazement, half fear. I'd found the one man who met Heracles' conditions. Not only did Heracles hate him, but he was downright scary. I resisted the urge to nuzzle his wide palm, uncertain how to react.
You have to survive until I return, he warned me. Do what you must, however bad you feel about it. Lie, kill, steal. Your focus must be on surviving.
What does he know about what's coming?
This isn't how humans give pep talks.
Survive, Alessandra.
I swallowed hard, overwhelmed by his intensity, and nodded. I will. His hand fell away from my face.
I brought you something.
He averted his gaze as he said it. I started to smile curiously. He bent to retrieve a satchel I hadn't noticed leaning against the railing. Wordlessly, Adonis handed it to me and moved back. I opened it and then laughed.
Mrs. Nettles, I exclaimed, and reached in to pull the squirming animal out of the dark satchel.
I hugged her, now fully aware of her connection to me.
I can't believe you kept her all these years.
Adonis cleared his throat in discomfort. He was as adept with emotion as Heracles was.
Yeah. She can't go with me.
So are you lending her to me, or can I keep her?
His jaw clenched. I was struggling not to laugh, always tickled when I thought of tough Adonis Mismatch and his stuffed toy.
She's yours, he replied curtly.
Aw, you'll miss her.
He muttered a curse and turned away, striding towards the front door.
Wait! Adonis!
I called after him. He stopped without turning. I had no reason to ask him to wait, and I racked my brain for something that wouldn't leave me yet again humiliated in front of him.
Thanks, I managed finally.
And safe travels.
Read the card.
I almost laughed. A card and stuffed animal from the butcher? Mrs. Nettles handed it to me. I opened it, read the names present, and gasped.
It was all I could take before they locked up the file, he said.
These are my parents?
Yes.
Emotions jammed my ability to speak. I stared at him in surprise for a long moment, then at the names on the card.
You're coming back, aren't you?
I asked at last.
Your name is seared into my soul. I will always return to you.
My breath caught.
That's
the most incredible thing I've ever heard.
Good.
I became the stupidest person on the planet when he looked at me like that. Warmth bloomed within me beneath his intensity, leaving me fevered and speechless and oh, so aware of the significance of this meeting. I no longer had to doubt his intentions, his loyalty. Him. He tilted his head, his lips turning up in a half smile. He was feeling what I did. The fire in my blood. The furnace at my lower belly. Humiliated did not begin to describe what it was like knowing he was so intimately connected to me. "Survive," he said softly, one last time. He walked out, and the front door closed behind him.
"Mismatch," Mrs. Nettle said, watching him retreat.
I bit back tears. Why did I feel like he was never coming back?
"It's okay. He'll be back. Or something." I didn't know why I wanted it to be true.
"Let's show you your new home." With a deep breath, I tucked the card inside my bra for safekeeping, repeating their names over and over as I walked with her towards the bedroom. Leandra was waiting inside and stopping in her pacing to stare.
"What?"
I smiled and introduced them, explaining how I'd brought Mrs. Nettles to life when I was little. Leandra picked her up and studied her before placing her on the bed.
"Did that asshole make you cry?" she asked, returning to me.
"No." She waited for more. I didn't know what to say about Adonis, but it wasn't anything bad. His thoughtfulness was beyond that of anyone I'd ever known.
"You're almost late." Leandra snatched a handbag from the table near the door.
I did my best to stop thinking of Adonis and focus on what happened today.
"Ugh,"
I waved at Mrs. Nettles, who waved back.
"Your escort is waiting. The magistrate said only you are to come because of the level of those attending."
Leandra handed me my knife and said again,
"I don't like it."
I strapped it on my good thigh as we walked towards the foyer. "I'm sure it'll be fine. Too many people are watching me for him to act, right?"
"You are way too trusting."
"I just mean, I don't think the Triumvirate members are in the same page, and like you said, I don't have my full powers yet."
"I'll take care of Mrs. Nettles if you wind up dead." "Oh my gods, Leandra. Doom and gloom everywhere."
I smiled at her despite the outburst, warmth blooming inside me from Adonis's gift and touch.
"You do love me."
I wrapped her in a tight hug.
"Stop it," she hissed and pushed me away. "You'll ruin your dress."
Grinning, I left her in the foyer and went outside, where the two guards had doubled. My instincts tickled the back of my neck. My happiness faded at the idea I'd be going to an event without Leandra or Adonis. One of the guards led me down the opposite way I'd gone every other time I left the villa. The compound was large enough for the change in direction not to be suspicious. So I went, limping after him. I didn't start to worry until I recognized the closet-sized entrance to the underground cave where the Oracle lived. Leandra's warning made me slow. When I saw the first guard enter, I stopped completely.
"Ma'am," said one of them behind me.
I stretched for the knife.
"It's okay, guys, back up a bit."
I turned at Lantos's voice. He wore his mask and was dressed in a tuxedo. My hand hovered over the weapon as he approached.
"I reconsidered the request you made of me," he said, "for my ears only. We have 10 minutes before the luncheon. If you can promise to keep this quick, we'll go down and see her. You can ask her how to use your powers, but you cannot kill her. That's the deal."
I gazed up at him. "What made you change your mind?"
"A common friend."
Touched by Adonis bringing Mrs. Nettle by, I felt my guard lower, knowing he'd set this up.
Gods help me, I trusted him.
"You'll need this."
Lantos handed me a familiar red cord bracelet.
"My magic protected you from the fumes last time. This will help you stay focused this time."
"The magistrate is letting us visit her?"
"I paid off some of his guards." He winked. "Shift change is at 1, though, so we need to go quickly."
I gazed at him for another long moment before nodding and stepping forward. I slid the bracelet in place. Immediately, the ribbons around me disappeared. We walked into the facility without any challenge from the guard. Lantos and I went to the elevator, and I sneaked a look at him. Something felt off. He was open and friendly as always, but...
Adonis is going on vacation for a few days, he said. Lucky bastard.
I smiled. He's a different kind of guy.
You figure out what makes him tick?
I shook my head.
Me neither. Makes me think I don't really want to know.
We agree there.
I wiped sweaty palms on my dress. My stomach was turning over at the thought of the tormented woman mere steps away.
You okay with seeing her again?
He asked as the elevator ceased moving.
Yeah. A little nervous.
The doors opened, and the heady scent of amber, sulfur, and other exotic spices filled my senses. The band at my wrist wasn't really helping it. I was cartwheeling mentally from the Oracle catnip before we left the elevator. I exited and closed my eyes, breathing the intoxicating scent deeply. It calmed me, and a faint tingling at the base of my skull reminded me of how I felt around Adonis. With my senses dulled, I didn't feel the strange coolness at my neck, until a sharp sting penetrated my addled brain.